This is Audible.
This is Gorilla Mindset, How to Dominate and Unleash the Animal Inside of You, Better Self-Control, Improved Health and Fitness, and More Money, written by Mike Cernovich and narrated by Mike Cernovich. Thank you so much for listening to Gorilla Mindset. In Gorilla Mindset, you're going to learn how to improve your self-confidence by changing the way you talk to yourself and others. You're going to learn how to reframe challenges as opportunities for personal growth. You're going to learn how to change your moods and to stop feeling bad and stop feeling anxious and depressed. You're going to learn how to be more mindful and conscious. You're going to eliminate feelings of frenzy and absent-mindedness. You're going to develop clearer, sharper, and more focused thinking. You're going to have a body that feels good and works for you rather than against you. You're going to earn more money by thinking of yourself as a personal brand, and you're going to live a life so remarkable that you were previously too afraid to imagine it. I've been at this for a while, and we're going to get to work. Thank you so much again for listening to Gorilla Mindset. Introduction. Change your mindset, change your life. Gorilla Mindset is a book for those of you who want more out of life. That more could be control of your emotions, a better relationship, more money, better romances, a more rewarding career, or even freedom from anxiety and depression. But there's a catch. To get more out of life, you must get more out of yourself. You must take personal responsibility for your thoughts and your emotions. You must stop blaming the system. The days of looking outside of yourself for answers are gone. This goes against what we've all been taught. We're told that the secret to getting more out of life is to buy some new gadget, or a car, or drink beer, or smoke cigarettes. One successful cigarette ad campaign proclaimed, "You've come a long way, babe," as if inhaling cancer represented a triumph of women's liberation and the apex of human freedom. All of us have tried filling the void with material objects. We see something bright and shiny. Maybe there's a new watch, or a new car, or a piece of jewelry. Something says that we're lacking, and if we make this purchase, it'll fill that void. But it's a lie. To get more out of life, you must get more out of yourself. The hard work, and this is not a book of feel-good nothingness or validation, starts with you. The work is hard, but it is also fulfilling. Gorilla Mindset will teach you how to get the most out of yourself. By the time you finish this book, you will be on your way to total control of your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, the building blocks of your life. You will get more out of life by getting more out of yourself. Who is Mike Cernovich? That's a way of saying, who am I? As this is a practical book on mindset, you want to know why it'll work for you, and quite frankly, who am I to tell you anything about life? Those are legitimate concerns. The techniques in Gorilla Mindset, while being involved with science, were first applied to my own life and the life of others. I grew up as a child on welfare. I had holes in my clothes. My parents were well-meaning and good people, but they had no concept of how to make or save money. They made mistakes and did the best they could, which is all you can expect from anyone, but they did make a lot of mistakes. Not only was I the poorest kid growing up, but I was naturally chubby. I was bullied. I was afraid to walk home from school, as more often than not I would be jumped. I was called names. My dad told me to start taking martial arts, and he even started taking classes with me, but I was not naturally athletic. I was clumsy and out of shape and couldn't even do a single push-up. I hated martial arts classes and would have quit if my dad hadn't been there for me. I just went through the motions because I had no talent or belief in myself. One day a bully beat me up badly. It was humiliating. My sister had to pull the attacker off of me. I felt demoralized and powerless. There was a mattress in our garage, and I went there and laid down on it, and I cried myself to sleep. When my dad came home from work, he opened the garage door, looked down at me with part pity and part contempt, and he asked me one question that changed my life. "When are you going to get serious?" Those words, coupled with the expression on his face, were a wake-up call for me. I made the decision there. I would get serious. Very serious. I trained until my body was exhausted and would hit the heavy bag until my knuckles bled. When I read in a martial arts magazine that Thai fighters did 10 rounds of boxing on the heavy bag, I decided to do the same thing. When I learned that Thai boxers would roll up magazines and hit their shins and legs to toughen themselves up, I did that as well. I learned that when you consciously put in work, you will make progress. You might have terrible genetics. You might have the potential to be in the Olympics, or you might not have the potential to do much, but you will improve. I earned my black belt in Taekwondo, boxed, and began beating all the bullies who bullied me. I had hair trigger and would even look for reasons to fight, but I was never happy and my social skills were poor. I was awkward and weird. My mindset was based on vengeance rather than on exploration, connecting with people, and being happy. At one point, I was invited to attend a school lock-in at the YMCA with a bunch of other classmates. I was afraid that I was going to get into a fight, so I put Tiger Balm to keep my joints warm, just in case. I also didn't perform well in school, with every teacher having the same line for my parents at PTA meetings. Michael is so smart, he does not live up to his potential. It wasn't that I enjoyed getting into trouble, but I grew up in a poor neighborhood. Where I came from, getting good grades and doing homework wasn't the norm. I'd get into fights, steal stuff from the grocery store, shoot out car windows with a BB gun that I stole. When one of my acts of vandalism made the local newspaper, I even clipped it out and looked at it with pride. To change my life, I had to change my mindset. I had to stop looking at life from a negative, vengeance point of view. I decided to apply myself to my life and to make it better. I became a well-known lawyer, a writer, and now I'm a podcaster who travels the world. In a lot of ways, my successes make me laugh, as my life story is unbelievable, and I never would have imagined it could have been possible. And I'm still working at improving every day. Sometimes when people say they like me or ask my advice, it's hard to understand why. There are days I still feel like the fat kid who was afraid to walk home from school. But here I am, successes, failures, and flaws, and all their shame and all their glory. So maybe you'll find the answer to what you're looking for. But I'm going to ask you, isn't it time for you to get serious? If you want to change your mindset, you have to know what is mindset. Mindset is a set of assumptions, methods, or beliefs that you live by and what other people live by, and that it modifies your behavior and changes your behavior. In other words, if you have certain mindset beliefs, you're going to behave according to those beliefs. Imagine a computer. The monitor, keyboard, and processor are the hardware. Without any software to run it, your computer would be worthless. Your body is your hardware and your mindset is your operating system. It gives you access to the power of the hardware and determines what software you can run. It lets you get the most out of your computer, allowing you to balance your checkbook or create 3D designs. Your mindset determines how you perceive and interact with the world. The mindset revolution was started by Dr. Carol Dweck, who wrote her book Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. In Mindset, Dr. Dweck identified powerful research into psychology that showed the differences between success and failure often had less to do with your talent and more to do with the mindset. Specifically, some people had what's called a fixed mindset and some people had a growth mindset. People with a fixed mindset would think, well, I got what I got. My talent is what it is. And because of that, they wouldn't challenge themselves. Other people who maybe didn't have that natural talent but had a growth mindset would say, yeah, I don't have the greatest talent in the world, but I know that I can get better and I can improve. Well, when you look at people over years, people with the growth mindset actually out-succeeded people who had that fixed mindset. So Dr. Dweck's work is important and valuable, but it's primarily a scholarly work rather than one focused on application. In Guerrilla Mindset, you learn how to apply those mindset principles to your own life. In addition, you're going to learn how to think about the world through the mindset of abundance. Adopt an abundance mindset. Just as mindset can be understood as being growth or fixed, the scarcity and abundance mindsets also create a polarity. Those who have an abundance mindset are far more likely to be happy with their lives, and they're more likely to succeed and accomplish their goals. What is the difference? Well, imagine you start with the assumption that we live in a world of limited possibilities. That is a fixed mindset and it's a scarcity mindset. You look around and you see a world of scarce resources. You view yourself as having scarce resources. When you think of yourself that way, you're not going to grow. Now imagine you believe the world is massive and full of possibilities. Anything you want to do is possible. You recognize that what you do matters, that your choices matter. You recognize that each new day is full of possibilities. How would you act if you knew that anything you wanted to do was possible? Would you live your life differently if you believed that you were abundant and full of potential? Well, your mindset is a choice. Think of those of you who have children or even a playful dog and how each day they wake up with excitement and curiosity. My dog wakes me up in the morning. He jumps up on my bed and licks my face. He acts as if he has never seen me and that our day presents endless excitement. To him, it's as if chasing a ball is something he has never done. He begins each day with an abundance mindset, knowing that anything is possible. Well, we all started off as children. We had that abundance mindset, and we had a genuine fascination and curiosity about life. Somewhere along the way, we lost it. But mindset is a choice, and you can find it if you choose to view the world as one of abundance. Change your mindset, change your life. Remember the definition of mindset. It's a set of assumptions and beliefs that you have, and that they're so powerful that your behavior will conform to those beliefs. I know this better than a lot of people, too. As I said, I used to have that fixed mindset. I had that scarcity mindset. But I learned how to view the world through one of abundance and through one of growth. So what I want you to do is understand that the answer to all of life's most difficult problems resides inside of you. You might find that controversial now because you might feel frenzied or stressed out. But it is there if you learn to look at yourself as a resourceful person. I've helped thousands of people change their mindset throughout the years. Men have learned how to be more confident, assertive, and happier by changing their mindset. I have a whole lot of reviews on iTunes that I suggest you read. People have said that the podcast is mind-bending, that it's altered their consciousness. They've said that I provide the most honest outlook on life and that if you just apply these principles, you will change and that change is possible. So I'm here to help you find the right mindset, and this book is for you and for those of you who are willing to do whatever it takes to succeed. You have the permission and tools you need to succeed. When is the last time someone sat next to you and asked you what your hopes and dreams were? When if somebody said, what do you want out of life and how can I help you get it? That isn't what happens, though. Society usually only speaks about what you owe them, your duties, your responsibilities, and they load you up like a pack mule. You're not allowed to do what you want because that might eliminate your ability to serve others. What about you? What do you want? What you need is permission, and you need tools. I'm giving you permission. As of right now, you have permission to live life on your terms, to live your dreams. This book is the tools, but you have to apply them to your own life to get what you want out of life. The Gorilla Mindset System. At the heart of Gorilla Mindset, or should we say the mind, is going to look at your self-talk, the way you frame things, your mindfulness, and also your mood and state. We're also going to talk about your health and fitness and how working out and lifting weights can improve how you think. This isn't going to be a book that tells you how to get ripped or get abs. It's going to be a book that tells you how to improve how you think by getting the most out of your body. Gorilla Mindset Shifts. Throughout this book are immediate steps you can take to the changes the way you think. We call these mindset shifts. The mindset shifts act as a sort of shift in your brain. While these shifts are subtle, you'll find that they turn on parts of your brain that you hadn't used and cause you to think about life differently. At the end of each chapter, we also have some habits for you. We call these Gorilla Mindset Habits, and these are actionable habits that you can apply immediately to your life. They're small habits, but big change takes small steps. Gorilla Mindset Worksheets. A lot of times, too, it's helpful to write out your patterns of thought and to put pen to paper or put your keyboard to work. Where applicable, I've included worksheets that you can use to further these exercises and to enhance your understanding of mindset. The Gorilla Mindset Shifts, Habits, and Worksheets are going to reinforce what you read, so it isn't a theoretical book. It's a book that you apply to your life. How to use this book. This is a workbook, not a lecture. The operative word is work, and you will need to make a commitment to putting in work every day. Reading the book alone is going to be a waste of your time. What I suggest you do is print out the book. If you have the paperback version, write as much as you can. If you're listening to the audiobook, write stuff out. When you put your body and mind together working, when you write it out, when you annotate things, it activates parts of your brain that you might not use. Writing is a physical act that engages your body and mind. It also puts your words into real life so that they're not abstract thoughts. Take ownership of your life. Start by taking ownership of your words. Perform the exercises at the end of the chapter, and you will develop a more powerful, stronger mindset. Remember, this is your book. You own it. If you don't agree with something that I've said, you don't have to argue with me or prove me wrong. Change it. A lot of what we're going to do here is encourage a conversation. The point is that you do something. If this book instills in you a sense that you must lead a more productive, more conscious life, even if you disagree with all the things I tell you to do, then my job has been done. I'm here to share concepts and specifics, but I'm not a guru. Part of changing your mindset is engaging actively in your own life and the lives of others. So again, if you disagree with me, great, try something different. Now let's get to work. Chapter 1, Mindset is a Conversation, the Power of Self-Talk. Imagine a friend of yours came over to you for some advice. Perhaps he lost his job or his wife left him or some other tragedy hit him. Imagine he was facing a real crisis and turned to you for help. What would happen if you said, your life is over, you always make these mistakes? You probably wouldn't have that friend for long, would you? While you should never candy coat the truth, being overly dramatic is inaccurate and it's unhelpful. Our friends turn to us for a combination of emotional support, validation, and actionable advice. You should support yourself in the same way. Gorilla Mindset Shift. Treat yourself like a treasured and trusted friend. Shouldn't you treat yourself like a trusted friend? Think about how you talk to yourself when you're down. Here's some actual things I've said to myself. You are so stupid. Why does this always happen to me? My life is over. I always make the same mistakes. While those negative sentiments are bad in themselves, what makes them worse is how dramatic they are. If you said that to other people, again, they would think, well, I don't always make that mistake. My life isn't over. Well, why do we talk to ourselves like that? Think about people you know who are hysterical and make overreactions. Don't we do that to ourselves? It's time to change that, and you can change it by improving your self-talk. What is self-talk? Self-talk is that interlocution. It's that conversation you have. It's that running dialogue. And where did you learn it? Well, you probably just learned it from what other people said to you. For the most part, we learn how to talk how? By having other people talk to us. So a lot of our self-talk didn't even come from ourselves. And no one taught us how to improve our self-talk. It just happened through osmosis. We silently repeated the same speaking patterns and words and phrases that others had, and that changed our mindset. And that changes often in a very bad way. But it's time to take control of your self-talk, and you can take control of your self-talk by following these self-talk methods. How can you improve your self-talk? There's a well-known marketing adage that applies to your self-talk as well. If you don't like the conversation, change it. Guerrilla mindset shift. Change the conversation you have with yourself. To improve your self-talk, the first step is to recognize that you're actively engaging in self-talk. Now, this may seem obvious, but how many times does your mind spiral out of control, your thoughts spun away, and you didn't know what you were thinking? Well, there's a way to control that. Write it down. Write down that self-talk. Then look at it on a piece of paper so that you can literally see the things you're saying to yourself. Once you recognize that you're engaged in the conversation, then you can change it. Here are four actionable steps you can take to improve your self-talk. 1. Talk to yourself in a mirror. Rather than merely attacking yourself in silence, bring the conversation out. Find a mirror, look into the mirror, and begin talking. Do not censor yourself. Have the same conversation in front of the mirror that was going on in your head. And as you're talking, look at yourself. Look at your facial expressions. Is that person that you're looking at in the mirror the kind of person that you want to see? Well, that's the kind of person that your mind is hearing when you talk to yourself that way. 2, record those nasty voices. Get a tape recorder and record yourself. Again, don't censor yourself. Be real. Say everything that you were just saying to yourself out loud. And then in a day or two, play back the recording and listen to it. You're going to realize it sounds ridiculous, and you might not like the way it sounds. In fact, a lot of people hear it and they cringe. That's an important part of improving your self-talk. When you listen to it and you don't like what you're hearing, ask yourself, why am I talking to myself that way? Why would I talk to myself that way? Record it, listen to it, and then when you've decided that that's ridiculous, you can delete that recording. But if you catch yourself talking to yourself like that again, get out the tape recorder and record it. 3, ask yourself questions. Criticism and self-hate are not based on open inquiry. They're based on value judgments, and more often than not, these value judgments didn't even come from you, they came from somewhere else. So rather than start talking to yourself in declarative statements, start asking yourself questions. Again, self-hate is a rant. Self-hate is not based on inquisitiveness. It's based on just screaming and being annoying. Well, talk to yourself by asking yourself questions. Ask yourself, am I being a hateful person? Do I want to be a hateful person? Am I being a drama queen? Am I the type of person who loses my mind over stupidity and nonsense? Am I choosing in this moment to be the type of person I want to become? Ask yourself those questions and then answer them. Literally, start the conversation. To change the conversation, you ask the right questions. Ask the questions rather than make statements about yourself. 4, affirmations and mantras. Another way to improve your self-talk is to develop a mantra or an affirmation. This can be anything you want. Imagine the type of person that you want to be. Visualize that person and then repeat your affirmation after you've written it as often as you need to. Guerrilla mindset shift is your affirmation. It can be as corny as you want it to be. What matters is that the power of self-talk resonates with you. You have permission to do any goofy new age stuff so long as it works. Here are some examples of mantras. I'm unstoppable. You could even say from Apocalypse Now, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory. You can say, this is a challenge and it will test my resolve. And even if I don't win, I'm going to grow stronger. You can say, today I was better than I was yesterday. You can say, the only easy day when facing adversity today was yesterday. I knew a doctor who, when confronted with an adversity and a problem, would say, mighty. He would just repeat to himself over and over and over again, mighty, 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 mighty. He was reminding himself who he was and who he wanted to be. Again, it doesn't matter what your affirmation is. If it works for you, it's good. Make it work for you. That is all that matters. It doesn't matter what I or anyone else think. Your affirmation can also be long. It can be a full essay. It can be a sentence. It can be anything you want it to be. But you have to write it out and, again, think about who you want to be. For example, Army Rangers have an affirmation or a mantra, based on the Ranger Creed. It's a long sentence, but it goes like this. Never shall I fail my comrades. I will always keep myself mentally alert, physically strong, and morally straight, and I will shoulder more than my share of the tasks, whatever it may be, 100% and then some. That's powerful living. Improving your self-talk will also improve your relationships. A lot of the reason that you talk to people in the way you do is based on how you talk to yourself. If you talk to yourself all the time, that puts you in a bad mood and makes you feel negative, and then you direct that negative energy out. Moreover, those same behavioral patterns and the same thought patterns and the same speaking patterns you use to yourself are going to be used on other people. So if you really want to improve your self-talk, if you really want motivation, ask yourself if you want better relationships with people. Well, the better relationships with people are going to come when you have a better relationship with yourself, and you're going to improve your relationship with yourself by improving your self-talk. How to create your own powerful affirmation. This is where the worksheets come into play. You want to write out your affirmation, and you want to kind of find a reason for that affirmation. A lot of research into the science of willpower shows that you're going to stick to your goals, and you're more likely to achieve your goals if you have a reason for doing them. So when you create an affirmation, ask yourself, why do you want this affirmation? Again, your affirmation can be anything from belief you hold about yourself to a commitment to perform some new task or engage in a new set of habits. In other words, affirmation is not a fixed concept with a clear meaning. It is not a rule to live by. It is something that you apply to yourself. Fill in the blanks. Just say, I'm going to blank because blank. It could be anything. Again, it doesn't matter. I'll give you an example. I'm going to go warm up my brain before work because I enjoy having clarity of thought and intense focus. Or I might say, I'm going to take a contrast shower because I want to feel invigorated. I'm going to get out of bed rather than hit the snooze button because I'm tired of being passive about life. Write out your affirmations. Type them out or write them out. It will make them more believable. It'll also put body to your thoughts. Your affirmation could even be an essay. For example, I'll read you the essay that I use as my own affirmation on life. I call it, I will. Maybe this, maybe that. Maybe I'll be a contender. Mr. Maybe is the ultimate seducer. Mr. Maybe will whisper things in your ear. He'll tell you maybe you can, maybe you can't, maybe this is too hard, maybe it won't work. Committing to Mr. Maybe is easy because it requires no risk. You can rationalize anything. But later in life you're going to say, I could have been a contender. I could have done something. I don't listen to Mr. Maybe. There is no maybe. There is no might. There is no that sounds interesting. You're either in or you're out. There's the daily, hourly, minute-by-minute, unrelenting commitment. Make a commitment to yourself, starting this moment. It's a basic commitment that only requires two words. I will. I will treat today like the beginning of a new life. I will go to the gym. I will turn off the television. I will stop reading filth, rage, and clickbait websites. I will fuel my body for optimal performance. I will make more money than I will spend. I will visualize my perfect day. I will keep moving, fighting, struggling, and giving the world my all. I will fall asleep a better man than I woke up. Are you willing to kill Mr. Maybe? You're either in or you're out. What's it going to be? The self-talk worksheet. Again, self-talk refers to the conversation we have with ourselves. To improve this conversation with yourself, put your words into writing. Filling out this worksheet will help you become more mindful and conscious of your language and thought patterns. How do you speak to yourself? What words and phrases do you use when talking to yourself? What is the phrase most commonly used when you find yourself in a troubling situation? Write it out. Here's an example from my own life. I tend to speak in absolutes. When something doesn't go my way or when I make a mistake, I say to myself, you always mess this up. You never get this right. This negative thinking reinforces an unconscious belief that I am incompetent. It's harmful and destructive. When you talk to yourself that way, how do you feel? Again, write it out. When I talk to myself using the absolutist negative language, I feel disempowered, I don't feel motivated, I don't feel inspired, I feel hopeless. I don't want to feel that way. So write down how you feel when you talk to yourself that way. That's going to, again, help you engage in the process and change the way you self-talk because you're going to say, I don't want to feel that way. What is a new empowering or comforting phrase you can use when talking to yourself? Again, this can be a phrase you own. When you make a mistake, how can you recognize it and how can you correct the mistake without beating yourself up? Write that out. Here's what I do. I wrote this out. I often make mistakes, but my mistakes are not an indictment of my character, but the reminder I am human. Moreover, each mistake gives me an opportunity to reflect and grow. Yours could be something totally different. It doesn't matter. Guerrilla self-talk habits. 1. Avoid speaking in absolutes. Rather than saying, I always make this mistake, recognize that each time you make a mistake, you can grow. Moreover, do you really always make the same mistake? Chances are you don't, so you're not even telling yourself the truth. Again, avoid speaking in absolutes. 2. Talk to yourself as you would a close friend. When you find yourself going on a rant against yourself, stop. Ask yourself, would I talk to a close friend, a loved one like this? Chances are you wouldn't. And if you did, you probably wouldn't have any friends. 3. Smile when you're angry at yourself. Mood, posture, and facial expressions are all linked, and it's been proven that merely engaging in the physical act of smiling can lift your spirits and make you feel happier. When you start talking to yourself in a negative way, raise your body up, take a deep breath, and smile. You might find that the rant stops dead in its tracks. 4. Turn a critical statement about yourself into a question. Rather than blame yourself and talk down yourself, ask yourself, how can I prevent making the same choice in the future? By asking yourself questions rather than judging yourself, you start to find solutions and you stop thinking about yourself in a negative way. 5. Talk to yourself in front of a mirror. Look at yourself as you talk to yourself. Repeat the same negative words in front of a mirror as you are in your head. How do you look? Is that the type of person you want to be? Chapter 2. Mindset is a choice. Change the way you perceive life's challenges. We've all heard the expression, it's all about your frame of mind. That is one of those pieces of homespun wisdom that everyone assumes you understand, but nobody explains. We're left with an intuitive sense that there's some kind of concept called frame, that it exists and that it matters. But when you think deeply about a frame, it turns up making us wonder, what is it? What is framing? Framing is how you choose to view things. It's the way you choose to understand situations and the way you can understand language. For example, as a lawyer, I learned a very technical meaning of framing. When lawyers speak of frame, they're talking about the key issue or legal question that matters in a case. That is, what question do you ask a judge or jury to decide? How you ask a question and what facts you include when asking the question often influences the answer. There are entire books devoted to how you ask the right questions when seeking a raise, a favor from a friend, or even a date. The way you ask a question can determine how the question is answered, and it's something that even children understand. When a child asks a parent for a privilege, they often frame the question as, Mom said I could stay the night at my friend's house. Is that okay with you? By including the fact that Mom said it's okay, the child is letting you know your answer won't cause drama or conflict. Even children know how to frame the issue. Framing the issue is so important that there are entire books on it, because life is messy. Not every fact matters, not every fact will help you. Some help you and some hurt you. The same is true of facts of your life. Psychologists also use the idea of framing when studying preferences, choices, and risk. Any choice can be described in terms of its good outcomes, its bad outcomes, or both. Whether a decision is described as a positive frame, focusing on the good outcomes, or a negative frame, focusing on the bad outcomes, will radically change not only your decision, but your willingness to take on the risk. For example, if I told you, this operation has a 10% chance of killing you, what would you say? What if I said, this operation has a 90% chance of saving your life? Your decision would be entirely different because of the way the question was framed. Framing is part of our everyday life because in the real world, decisions are complicated and problems are messy. We're all somewhat moral, somewhat immoral. We're also somewhat confused. Some facts help us and some facts hurt us. Whether we are conscious or not, we use these facts when telling stories to myself. And that again goes back to self-talk, and here's where we're going to tie it together. Remember your self-talk. The self-talk is the stories you tell yourself, right? It's the facts. It's the signals you send yourself. Well, you want to frame things when talking to yourself in a way that's going to be positive and inspirational and meaningful. So imagine your consciousness is a judge or jury, your parents, or a friend you must persuade. You want your conscious mind to believe in you. Framing is how your mind perceives whatever situation you are in. Framing is how you choose to think about and thus perceive a challenge in your life. Frame is self-talk. It's how you talk to yourself. When you're presented with an issue, do you say this is a challenge, it's an opportunity, or you say it's a horrible situation? Well, both things might be true, but you can frame it differently, and you can frame yourself talk in a way that actually makes you feel resourceful and makes you feel like you can accomplish your mission. Frame is also focus. Tony Robbins is a wildly successful self-help author, and he often says what you focus on is what you feel. He's recognizing that how you frame an issue, i.e. what you choose to focus on, will determine how you feel about the issue. There's a lot of evidence on this, and there's a lot of scientific evidence, and there were some studies done on an Olympic medal winner. Here's a trick question. Well, it's not a trick question, but it'll seem like it. Would you rather finish in second or third place? The answer would seem obvious to you. Obviously, if you have to choose between second or third place, you would want second place. Yet, studies showed that people who won the gold medal, the silver medal, and the bronze medal had different levels of happiness. For example, the people who won the silver medal were less happy years down the road than bronze medals winners were. Well, why is that? The study was called Why Less is More, Counterfactual Thinking and Satisfaction Among Olympic Medalists. And what they found out was that it's a framing issue. The person who won the silver medalist framed the issue as, I almost won the gold. I was almost on the Wheaties box. I was almost the big time. The people who won the bronze medal framed it differently. They said, I almost wasn't even on the podium. I'm so grateful to be on this podium. See, even though one person, the silver medalist, technically finished higher than the bronze medalist was happy. And again, that was all about the frame. The silver medalist chose to focus on what might have been, the gold medal. The bronze medalist also chose to focus on what might have been, no medal at all. The silver medalist, rather than choose to focus how he almost became a gold medalist, should have been happy to have the silver medal. But that's not how we are. We choose to frame things differently. But remember, your frame is a choice. How you choose to view life's difficulties, and we're all going to have them. And what you choose to focus on is a choice you make in the present moment. Guerrilla mindset shift. Reframe the issues. Choose to focus on how the difficulty you're facing will make you stronger, more intelligent, more emotionally complex, and more resourceful. There are several ways you can change your frame of mind. You can frame your problem as being small relative to a worse problem. It's helpful to get out of our heads, or as you may have heard growing up, get over yourself. Someone always has it worse. Look around you. Look at the world. Express gratitude for what you have. That is what you're choosing to focus on. Choose to focus on what you have and not on what you don't have. You can also frame your problems as a source of power. Each problem you face is preparation for something bigger and better. What if instead of feeling hopelessness or self-pity, you reframed your problem in this way? Once I've gotten through this, I will have a reservoir of strength that will make me unstoppable. Sure, you'll have the same problem. Yet what happens to your mind and body when you change how you choose to think about the problem? Your breathing improves. Your posture is upright. You no longer feel dejected. You develop a sense of, yeah, I got this. Remember that your mind and body are connected. When your frame is positive, you'll feel stronger and more energetic as well. You'll embrace the struggle. You'll say to yourself, yes, this hurts. It is hard. But once it's over, no one will be able to stop me. Remember, frame starts with a choice. You can choose how you view your problems. You can choose to view everything as an opportunity for growth, or you can choose to view everything as being hopeless. The choice, as always, is yours. The frame control worksheet. Again, write this stuff out. What is your biggest problem? The problem could be anything. It could be health and fitness. It could be money and finances. It could be relationships. Whatever the problem is your business, it's yours. Don't worry about what other people think. Write it out. After you've written out this problem, ask yourself, how can you reframe it as a challenge? For example, I have a horrible time sticking to a budget. I might say, my biggest problem is learning how to stick to a budget. I could reframe that problem as a challenge by saying, well, therefore, I'm going to learn how to track my spending in a software program like Mint. In other words, I view this challenge not as, oh, I can't do it. I can't stick to a budget, is I'm going to learn how to do it. And by learning how to do it, I'm going to become more resourceful. I'm going to become smarter. Plus, I'm going to have more money. Another thing you want to do is ask yourself, what is one area of your life that can be improved by choosing to frame this problem as an opportunity for growth? And then list three ways of solving your problem. Again, you write this stuff out. What can you do and how can you do it? If you're stuck, here are some ideas. Remember that solving problems makes us more resourceful, which gives us more tools to succeed in life. Today's problem is going to give you strength that you can use to do something even bigger and better tomorrow. Think about how you're getting better, stronger, smarter, more self-disciplined. You can also choose to frame your problem as being smaller relative to other problems. Remember the Olympic medal example. The silver medalist in the Olympics sees its problem as having not won the gold, whereas the bronze medalist feels lucky, as not winning a medal all would have been even worse. Again, it's how you choose to frame the issue. Write out your problems and reflect on how much worse your life could be. This will also give you a sense of gratitude for what you have. Guerrilla frame control habits. Here are some habits you can use to improve your frame. Watch your language. Instead of calling something a problem, reframe it as a challenge. It sounds like a cliche, but it really works. 2, remember that growth is painful. Adopting a growth mindset is bittersweet. The bitterness comes from the pain accompanying growth. No pain, no gain really is true, but there's sweetness that comes from growth. Nothing feels as good as winning and becoming a better person. 3. Remember that pain is inevitable. Even if you didn't embrace the pain of growth, life is going to bring the pain anyway. You cannot choose whether it's coming. It's just a matter of time. As is a motto in the Game of Thrones, a hit book series, and later an HBO show, winter is coming. Once you accept that pain is inevitable and leads to growth, you'll be better prepared to endure that coming winter. 4. Take the long view. The challenges you face today will give you resources you need to succeed tomorrow. You fell down a lot as a toddler before you learned to crawl. You tripped when learning to run. At some point, you were clueless and made mistakes. Yet those mistakes led to eventual mastery. 5. Embrace the suck. Let's face it, sometimes life is going to be hard, and no amount of arguing or wish were otherwise will change. When you go through pains and points in your life where everything is hard, accept it and embrace it. There's a motto in the Army, embrace the suck. Army Rangers go through demanding training. For 58 days, they average less than 2 hours of sleep a night. Every day is worse than the last. Bodies ache and break down. If they sat around complaining, they'd never get through training. Instead, they choose to embrace the suck, which allows them to endure. Chapter 3, Mindset is a Moment, How to Check into Your Life. We've covered a lot of ground in a short period of time. The concepts we're learning and applying do not take millions of words to explain, but the concepts are deep and they apply real understanding to your life. The progress only occurs when you take action and you apply the principles in your life. We started off by talking about self-talk, then the powers of choices, frame, and focus. Now you're ready to learn about mindfulness and how getting to the moment and using those same techniques can give you freedom from anxiety and from worry. Some think of mindfulness as esoteric or abstract, but you'll see that it simply brings together all of the ideas we have covered and will have real practical consequences for your life. Well, what is mindfulness? It's helpful to look at the definition others use so we can see where we deviate and where we build on those things. Again, we don't get hung up on what words mean. We get hung up on how can you improve your life. If you look at Wikipedia or anywhere else, they'll say mindfulness is the intentional, accepting, and non-judgmental focus of your emotions, thoughts, and sensations in the present moment. A lot of people do meditation. It's a nice start, but does it really give you anything that you can apply to your life? I've been applying mindfulness to my life for over 15 years, and that dictionary definition doesn't really tell me that much. It's too vague. To understand mindfulness better, let's start with something more concrete. Sometimes to understand a concept, you want to look at the opposite of a concept. If you want to understand what being mindfulness is, think of what being mindless is. Mindlessness is low consciousness, it's being distracted, it's being unaware. Well, mindfulness is the opposite. Mindfulness is high consciousness. Here is how I view mindfulness. Mindfulness is freedom from anxiety or worry. Mindfulness is perception, not judgment. Mindfulness is getting out of your head and getting into your body. Mindfulness is checking in to the present moment. Mindfulness is being in the zone or in a flow state. Mindfulness is being engaged. Mindfulness is being rather than doing. Now, your view of mindfulness may differ, and that's totally okay. Again, this is not a book where we argue about who is right or who is wrong. It's for you to apply these concepts to your life, because the answers are already inside of you, and all we need to do is get you through to yourself, to learn how to handle yourself. By the end of this chapter, you'll have your own understanding of mindfulness. But now that we have a working definition of it, let's get to the fun part. The rest of this chapter is divided into two sections. In the first part, we'll go through specific things you can do to become more mindful. In the second part, we'll look at very specific ways your increased mindfulness can be put to practical use to change your mood, your well-being, and your effectiveness in life. Part 1, how can we become more mindful? If you look at any dictionary definition of mindfulness, you're going to see something mentioning meditation. So the question is, do you have to do meditation to become more mindful? The answer is no. Meditation is one approach that some people use, and indeed I studied under a Samadhi seminar master on meditation. And while meditation is valuable, it teaches you to control your breath and posture, which are two key components of mindfulness. But you don't need to do it. You can take a more active approach to life. Meditation is valuable, and it will help you relax. But my view of mindfulness is more active. I want to be fully immersed in experiences I find valuable. I want to rid my body of negative emotions, thoughts, and feelings while living my life. How does that sound to you? Would you like to be more actively engaged in your life? If so, then this mindfulness techniques will work for you. It does take discipline to become more mindful. To get into the present moment is an active process. It requires a lot of discipline and a lot of self-control. but you've already begun to develop those skills from the other chapters. You now see why we covered self-talk and frame before discussing mindfulness, because now you already understand how to control your thinking, how to control your talk. These skills are going to be built upon and be applied to the mindfulness exercises. Here's how to use those self-talk and framing techniques to become more mindful. Where are you right now? Yes, I'm talking to you. Are you watching TV while skimming the words on the page? Or are you doing something else like doing the dishes while listening to the book? It's okay, I won't judge you. Don't judge yourself. Mindfulness, after all, is about perception rather than judgment. But use self-talk to get into the present moment. Right now I might say, I'm sitting on the couch reading a book. I'm rushed and I feel like I don't have enough time to finish it. The concepts are a bit esoteric. I don't know if this stuff will work for me. What is going on here? In other words, just check into where you are using that self-talk. Talk to yourself in the present moment. Work through what you're doing. And then try this. Try to turn off that judge. Just speak without any kind of judgment about what you're actually doing. You can just say, I am doing X, Y, and Z. I'm taking a walk while listening to this book. I'm doing dishes while listening to this book. But don't judge yourself. Or you could even take a different approach. You could reframe it. If you disagree with something, you could say, I disagree with this book, but that doesn't make me angry because I'm engaging actively in the process of growing. I'm learning more about myself and I'm improving myself, even though I might not agree with everything. Do you see what you did there? All you're doing is you're checking in. You're becoming more conscious. You're becoming more engaged. You're becoming mindful. You're using those same self-talk and framing techniques to check into the present moment. That's all mindfulness is. Mindfulness is being checked in, which we often don't know about until we're checked out. When we check out, we become breathless. We've all heard that expression, breathless. When you're breathless, you're not in control of your body. You're not checked in. You're spinning out of control. A lot of times that leads to hyperventilation. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? What now? I can't believe this is happening. You're not mindful because you're not aware in the present moment. What you're doing is you're focusing on the future, the anxiety, the things that might not even happen. So what you want to do is learn how to check into the present moment. And the surest way to get into the present moment is to become aware of yourself, become aware of your body. When you become aware of your body and you control your breathing, you become more relaxed and your thinking becomes more clear. So it doesn't matter where you are, you can use these mindfulness techniques anywhere. For example, I use them when doing my podcasts. I have a popular podcast on iTunes called the Mike Cernovich Podcast. Before each episode, I don't worry about what I'm going to do. I use these same mindfulness techniques. I use the self-talk. Before speaking, or sometimes I do talk out loud to warm myself up before I start speaking, I just check in. I'll give you an example. Right now, I'm looking at a microphone. It's black. It has a pop filter. And behind it, there's another microphone. The microphone is on a stand. I'm in a studio. I can hear myself speaking through headphones. As I do this, I know that everything is going to flow. I'm not worried about, well, what if I say the wrong word? What if this happens? I'm completely checked in. Now, of course, people make mistakes and things happen, but I don't judge myself when I make these mistakes and I don't get frustrated because being frustrated takes me to a different outcome. It takes me outside of the present moment. So rather than be worried about what's going to happen next or whether I'm going to make a mistake or whether I'm going to do something else, I just become engaged in the process of speaking. When I'm checking in, I'm not worried about what I'm going to say or what I'm going to do. I'm just becoming aware. Because of this, I don't have any kind of anxiety. I just check into the moment and I make things happen. You want to learn how to check into your body to become more mindful. Our bodies are kind of weird, aren't they? We often aren't even aware of them unless we feel deep pain or injury. For the day-to-day lives, we don't really notice much about our bodies. But when they're hurt, we notice them. Why is that? It's because we're not checked into our body. We tend to view ourselves as sort of brains with a blob and it resolves in a meat sack and it just sort of hangs out. But a powerful way to improve your mindfulness is to check into your body, to become fully aware and immersed inside of your body. So make the gorilla mindset shift. Check into your body by using self-talk to talk about what your body is doing and feeling in the present moment. To become aware of your body and where you are, just check into where you are right now. You're obviously listening to an audiobook. Are you lying flat on your back? Are you sitting up? Are you doing the dishes? Is the TV running? Maybe you're in the bathtub. Maybe you're walking. It doesn't matter. What you just want to do is become aware of your body and you want to use those self-talk techniques. For example, I'm laying down on my back, I have headphones on, I'm listening to this audiobook. It doesn't matter, but you want to think about where your body is, how it's positioned. And as you do this, you're going to become more aware and more conscious of your body. And how can you improve your body? Well, you have to be checked into it, right? You have to be aware of it. So think about it. How is your neck tilted? Is it crinked? Are you leaning forward? Are your shoulders popped forward? Again, it doesn't matter. Don't judge yourself. Don't say you're right. Don't say you're wrong. Just become aware of your body. And then once you've done that, we're going to go out to part two. How to use mindfulness to achieve your goals and improve your life. Part of achieving your goals is learning how to move with purpose and to accomplish things with purpose. One of the best ways to do that is to change how you walk. In fact, one of my most popular podcasts was called How to Move and Live with Purpose. In the podcast, I walked people through a mindfulness exercise that I actually use in walking and that you can use. And we're going to talk about that now. For example, when you walk, are you conscious? How's your posture? How do you land? Are you kind of falling forward and leaning back? We all think we know how to walk, but do we really know how to walk? If you look at how people walk, you'll see that a lot of people, they shuffle their feet, their posture isn't erect, and that they're off balance the entire time. For most people, walking is regaining your balance after losing it with each and every step. We don't notice our physical gait. But when you check into your body and you check into how you walk, you start to notice that you move with more focus and you move with more determination. You also look and feel more confident. So the gorilla mindset shift is start to live with a purpose by walking with a purpose and learn how to walk by using self-talk as you walk. Again, keep an open mind. It might seem a little weird. We all think we know how to walk, but how do we learn how to walk? Were we conscious about it or did it just sort of happen? So to become one with your body, pay attention. We do have poor posture. Our gait isn't sure. So the next time you go for a walk, get in touch with your body. Start with your feet. Say to yourself, my feet are striking the ground. Yes, actually use the self-talk. You may say something like, okay, my feet are walking on the ground, touching the ground. Left foot, right foot, heel the toe, heel the toe. While having this conversation, you will suddenly become aware of how your feet move when walking. It isn't something most of us are usually aware of. For example, we walk and we tend to land on our heels, and then we kind of fall forward, and then we kind of propel ourselves forward, and we're kind of off balance, but we don't really know what we do. But that's not actually the best way to walk. The way you want to walk is to be more on the balls of your feet. So you want to start walking a bit differently, and there's a way to change that. But again, it starts with the present moment. Use that self-talk. Heel to toe, heel to toe. Then say, I'm going to flex my calf a little bit. As you're walking, just flex your calf a little bit. You'll notice you're going to become more aware of your body now and aware of the balls of your feet, and your calves may even develop a slight pump. Maybe that was always there, but now again, you're becoming aware. Continue the conversation. I feel the balls of my feet now. I feel how my foot flexes. I feel my arch. My calves are burning slightly. Even though walking is not rigorous, you may feel your breath increase, and you may feel your heart rate increase. Your pace may increase too because you're now moving forward on your calves. The next step is to think about your glutes flexing. Your glutes are just your butt muscles, and when we walk, we usually don't flex our glutes. We tend to fall forward, which causes the pressure to go onto our quadriceps. Well, as you start walking and as you start propelling yourself on the balls of your feet, you're going to start flexing your glutes, and then you're going to feel yourself start to stand up straight. Your glutes are going to flex a little bit, and it will feel a little bit weird. A lot of us have what's called gluteal amnesia. Gluteal amnesia literally means your glutes are asleep, and that's because we sit too much. We rarely use our glute muscles as they're not activated while sitting. As you're walking and flexing, your glutes are going to move, they're going to flex, and you may even feel a slight pump. All of this feels a little bit weird at first, but go with the process. Your hips might also feel a little tight now, because as you're walking, your body is stretching out more, and your hips are opening up. Again, since most of us spend way too much time sitting, we have gluteal amnesia, that is our glutes don't flex, our hips are tight because we're leaning forward all the time, but when you start walking in this manner, your body is going to stretch out and you will feel your hips start to tighten up a little bit and you will feel your ab muscles might even feel a little bit tighter first. Now you want to start thinking about moving your shoulders back. Again, sitting is so fatal and we all do too much of it. Most of us, we have our shoulders pronated. They kind of lean forward, and that's because we're riding or because we're not sitting back with good posture. When you're walking, you want to start raising your shoulders back, and you're going to feel your whole posture start to change. Again, everything is connected. First, you think, I know how to walk, but as you're walking, you're on the balls of your feet, and then you're flexing your calves, and then you're flexing your glutes. You're feeling your hips opening up, your abs opening up. Suddenly your chest is higher. Suddenly your shoulders are back. And then notice what happens to your mindset. Your mindset actually improves. As you walk this way, you literally feel more confident. You feel more certain. Well, why? Because you weren't living in your body before, and you're living in your body now. You have a sense of connectedness and purpose. Most of the time when we walk, we're just mindless. But when you walk with purpose, you develop confidence, and you feel better. So continue walking. Remember, you're on the balls of your feet, you're flexing your glutes, you're stretching your hips, and you're standing tall. Pay attention to your chest. Again, you're going to feel your chest open up, and you're going to stand taller. That will change how you feel. Everything is connected. As you're walking, focus on your chest. Almost imagine like somebody's grabbing you by the nape of your neck, kind of like you see a mama bear grab the cub. That pulls your body up because you want to imagine your chest being pulled up. And as you do that, you're going to feel your chest raise up, and you're going to feel that your lower back is going to develop a little pump. Most of us, we have trained our bodies to have poor posture, and you realize now it takes a lot of effort to have proper posture. And you're not treating your body like an abstraction. You're becoming aware of every muscle in your body. You'll now notice when you walk that you have more flexion. You feel your body open up. You start to feel good. You start to feel one with yourself. You feel like you have more confidence. And again, your mood improves. If you want to understand this now, look around you. Do you see that most people have their chins hanging down? They kind of stare at the ground. Watch how they walk. Their shoulders slouch and their chins are down and they have poor posture. They're not in touch with their bodies, but now you are. Get in touch with your body, and you're going to feel more confident. You're going to be more checked in. So practice walking. Notice how your gait changes. More importantly, notice how your mood improves. As you continue walking in a mindful way, you'll notice that your posture improves when you're standing up, too. You develop the posture of a soldier, which gives you more confidence. You will now stand and walk with pride, focus, and determination. You can also use mindfulness to deal with anxiety, concern, and worry. Anxiety is caused by focusing on an uncertain event in the future. We humans tend to have the same anxieties, and they largely involve money, friends, family, and health. We agonize over money, wondering how we can pay our bills. But when you're worried about some future event, it affects you in the present moment, and it makes you feel not good about yourself. Living mindfully helps you get into the moment, which actually helps you solve problems. Yes, if you have money problems, you do want to solve them. You want to figure this stuff out. But letting your mind spiral out of control and feeling anxiety is actually a hindrance, and it makes it harder to solve these problems. Ask yourself, is being in a state of anxiety and worry going to solve a problem? Anxiety is just an emotion, and it's an emotion that disempowers you and accomplishes nothing. When you learn to get into the moment and to engage in active meditation, you no longer feel anxiety because you get into a state of flow. And as you talk to yourself more, you get into the moment and suddenly you don't feel as much anxiety. Why don't you feel anxious? Because a logical mind wants a logical explanation for why you stop feeling anxious. Anxiety is just a feeling about anticipating some uncertain event in the future, but now you're checked in and now you feel better about yourself. After all, you don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. All you know what's going to happen is in the present moment. You can even use mindfulness at the gym. I perform a mindfulness warm-up before I lift weights. I started becoming more mindful of my training after I watched a Day in the Life video of Kai Greene, a professional bodybuilder and a very thoughtful person. Before he engages in brutal workouts, he checks in. He uses self-talk and mindfulness. He says, "Why am I here? What am I doing? What am I trying to accomplish?" He also visualizes who he wants to become. Well, I used to find long warm-ups a bore, and it took a lot of effort at first to complete them. But I later realized boredom is a result of not being in the present moment. As you become more checked into the present moment, you experience less boredom. But here are some practical steps you can take. Turn off your cell phone. Even better, leave it in your car or gym locker. You're at the gym to lift weights. There's nothing that can't wait 30 or 40 minutes until you lift. Then get on a treadmill, exercise bike, or a stair climber. As your body starts moving, focus on having good posture, which we just talked about. Begin at a slow to moderate pace, and just ask yourself, why am I here? What do I expect to accomplish? And again, your answer could be anything. I tend to lift weights less for vanity, which used to be my goal, and more because I want to have a strong and powerful mind and because I want to live a long time. Your answer doesn't have to be my answer. Next, begin to feel your blood circulating. Your breath is going to increase, and you're going to feel sweat forming. You might even feel blood pumping to your brain, and that is a feeling that I really love. Tell yourself, You're at the gym because you will feel better after the workout, that going to the gym benefits you and improves your clarity of thinking and overall health. Or again, maybe you want to look better for a reunion. It doesn't matter. The answer is yours, not mine. You also want to be mindful when lifting weights. There are people you see at the gym day after day, year after year, and they never make any progress. That's because they're always chatting with friends or they're looking at a cell phone. Check into your body. Feel each movement. You're at the gym to build your body and improve your health. Focus. You can also use mindfulness to create deeper connections. To connect deeply with other people, you must be there. You must be present, mindful, and engaged. Yet when we talk to people, we often feel like we aren't heard. We feel like the person across from us is somewhere else. To make deeper connections, you want the person you're talking to feel like you're the only person in the room. Mindfulness is being present, it's being helpful. So here are some things you can do. When you feel distracted during a conversation, you can check in with these mantras. Remember the mantras we talked about earlier? I actually use these regularly, especially when there's a lull in conversation and maybe I feel bored. I say to myself, there's no place else I'd rather be. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. There's nowhere else I'd rather see. I'm telling myself, this is the person I want to be with. This is the place I want to be. And when you tell yourself this, believe it. Believe there's nowhere else you'd rather be and there's no one else you'd rather see. When you believe that, the person can feel it. Using those two mantras will help you develop deeper, longer-lasting connections. Again, mindfulness is not just some random concept about meditation. It's about being aware. It's about being present. It's about your daily life. It's a technique you can apply all the time, wherever you are. The mindfulness worksheet. This is another one of those worksheets you actually should fill out. Ask yourself, when did you last feel on or in the zone or in flow? You'll likely notice that you have better days and you have worse days, and you want to figure out why that is. Become more conscious. Write out what you were doing and why you were doing it. For example, I might ask myself, why do I do a good podcast, or how can I have a good podcast? Well, before doing a podcast, I start talking out loud. Again, I just talk about what's in the room. I take in a bunch of deep breaths. I exhale deeply. I try to warm up my vocal cords. This also helps me develop a pace in my podcast. Again, that's my answer. I'm just giving it as an example. Your answer can be whatever you want it to be. Check in to whatever task you're about to perform. Before you begin a hard day at work, or a workout, or even a family dinner with the in-laws, check in. Ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing. Are you working hard to take care of your family? Find your motivation. Checking in will help you become more aware of your emotions and thoughts, and it will make even mundane or boring things more fulfilling and meaningful. This is another worksheet to fill out. I'm about to blank. Fill in the blank. And I'm going to do this because blank and blank. Just write it out. Your reasons are your reasons. They're not my reasons, and it doesn't matter why you want to do what you want to do. For example, I would write, I'm about to go to the gym. I go to the gym because I feel great afterwards. The hour or so I suffer in the gym makes the rest of my life feel better. I have more energy, more vitality, and just feel better. You, your answers could be different. Again, this isn't about me. This is about you. And if I do something unpleasant, maybe I don't want to visit a family member, give myself a reason. I'm going to visit my family because they're kind-hearted people who mean well and they have always been there for me. Whatever annoyances I face are small in comparison to the largeness of their hearts. Just take control of your thoughts. Become checked in. That's all we're trying to do here. Fill out the worksheet and think of your own ways to become more mindful of life. These are some mindfulness habits that you can apply to your life, and they seem small, but remember, big changes start off small. So if you want to push yourself further, start applying these habits to your life. 1, when you feel an emotion coming over your body, just ask yourself, where do I feel it in my body? Sometimes I feel anger in my arms. I don't understand why that is, but when I become aware of the feeling, it helps me dissipate it. You can also go big. If you can literally go big, find an ocean, look at skyscrapers or waterfalls or mountains. Just focus on the vastness of it. If you can't go big literally, a lot of those headphones things help. You put some music on, you listen to it, imagine the waves crashing in. Buy an MP3 or a CD with that white noise or the sounds of a rainfall. You can also buy one of those little miniature waterfalls. Listen to some house music, some jazz, or some classical music. Put on good headphones. Again, become immersed in the experience and just let the feelings wash over you. And when all else fails, talk to yourself. Just say, here I am in the present moment. Describe your surroundings and that will come checked in. And here are 10 quick ways that you can become more mindful by paying more attention. Again, mindfulness is getting into the moment. Start noticing things. Writers and artists are masters at noticing details and quirks that others don't. But it's all there. We can all see it. Here are some quick ways that you can do it. Notice the eye color of every person.